When I was cleaning up my desk after Christmas, I found a scratch pad on which I had written our family predictions for 2016. I had predicted that Ted Wheeler would be elected mayor of Portland. Greg predicted that Hillary Clinton would be elected president. And Sarah predicted that her school would stay a K-8. Well, we were half right and half wrong, as Sarah's school is still a little bit in limbo. Others made predictions and wagers about 2016. Some were right and some were wrong. But it is that time of year when we tend to look back, to look at the whole of the year, to look at the sum of 366 days, and to try to make some sense of the aggregate. We do that with entertainment, with movies and music and books. We do that with politics. We do that with war and peace and the environment. We do that with our own lives, with work and health and family. And then January 1 rolls around. Feels like it came quite early this year. And we turn around, and 12 months, at the 12 months that loom ahead of us, and we wonder what will happen. And we think about what we look forward to. Some look forward to births and weddings. Some look forward to graduations and retirements. We look forward to summer vacation and the arrival of summer. And here at church, we look forward to celebrating our 125th anniversary this fall. So on this day, when we look forward and we look back, we hear from the mighty prophet Isaiah, whose words are almost always inspiring and encouraging and challenging. And we have that gamut of things from Isaiah today. Remember that several authors and editors wrote this thing we call the Book of Isaiah, and remember that the whole book covers over 200 years of Israel's history. Early in the book, the prophet warns the people that they must cease to do evil and learn to do good. Seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the widow, and plea for the orphan. But the people do not heed the prophet, and the prophet says that God punishes them for not being faithful to what God has asked them to do. As punishment, the people lose their homeland. In the middle of the book, we read about their life in exile, as captives in Babylon, far from the land they love. And then in the last part of the book, we learn that the people have been released from their captivity. They are able to go home and they rejoice. They rejoice until they see that the land they love has been destroyed. There is no temple in Jerusalem. Their fields lie charred and barren. The generations born in Babylon miss the comforts of that place, and they do not know this God of Israel. Joy turns quickly to despair and complaint. The people blame each other, and they blame God. But constant in this book of Isaiah is the presence of God, who engages with these rebellious, faithful, joyous, miserable people. In one sense, the book is about these people who follow God. We learn about them. They celebrated and feasted. Some celebrations turned to revelries and debaucheries that brought shame rather than honor. These people would thank God one minute and complain the next when things did not go their way. In exile, some decided it was easier to capitulate to Babylon than to try to continue to follow this God of Israel. Perhaps humanity has not changed all that much. Some days we do really, really well. We invent penicillin and a smallpox vaccine, and we eradicate terrible diseases. We donate generously and selflessly. We advocate for those who have no voice. We tear down systems that hinder the full living of people. But we have bad days too, bad months, bad years. The other day, Greg and I were trying to explain bomb shelters to Sarah. The images from Aleppo and Mosul are nothing less than depressing and horrifying. Massacres and shootings and greed. I don't need to tell you all of this. You know it already. So it's that time of year when we look back and we say, what were our good days? What were our bad days? What did we do well? What did we do poorly? And we might look at that in terms of our faith as well. If we were to turn around and look back at 2016, would we say that we followed Jesus well? Or would we say we stumbled or strayed or simply sat down on the path and refused to go one step further? I'm never entirely sure how to talk about faith here at Westminster. For some people, the word itself, faith, conjures up brainwashing or lockstep rote agreement with impossible things. And some speak gladly of their faith, of all that God in Jesus has done for them. Some read the Bible as interesting literature. Some read it as dull literature. Some read it as the blueprint for their life. Some don't believe in the divinity of Jesus. Others place all their bets on that very thing. So when I ask how well we did in our life of faith, I know I'm poking the bear a little bit. But because we are here for worship this day, be reading an ancient text whose themes sound rather contemporary, it seems worth the risk to admit. All of us have given God praise where praise is due, and all of us have given God cause to call us rebellious children. Maybe you, like me, have those times when you really don't want to love your neighbor, much less your enemy. And maybe you, like me, don't really want to give what you have to the poor, but would much rather spend it lavishly on yourself. And maybe you, like me, mourn the death of celebrities who kept you entertained for decades but shed not one tear for people in South Sudan or Afghanistan or Colombia or our inner cities or any of those places where violence has become normalized. It is so much easier not to follow Jesus. Sometimes I think it would be so much easier not to believe in God, the only downside being that I would have to find a new line of work. And then I think, if there were no God, who would love us unconditionally? If there were no God, who would care enough about us to call us on our sin? If there were no God, what would keep this community glued together, and where would all those great stories come from? If there were no God, how would we find life in the midst of death? If there were no God, who would we turn to when we've lost all hope? So I choose to believe in a God who is not some super sky deity with a wizard's beard and immensely sparkling white robes, but who is someone else. I choose to believe there is a God who is both proud enough to call the creation good and humble enough to sleep in an animal's feeding trough. I choose to believe in a God who avenged the slavery of the chosen people with terrible violence, a God who frightens me, whom I cannot understand. I believe in a God who was put to death on a cross, who in his dying moments cared for his mother and for those who died with him. I believe in a God who is as tender as the best parent of a baby and as frustrated as the best parent of a teenager. Sometimes we seek this God, and we turn around and we see if God is there. And sometimes God turns us around. We often say that in our prayer of confession, God, turn us around, which is what repentance really is, a turning away from being one way and a turning towards being another way. And then there are those moments when it feels as though God puts a blindfold on us and spins us around the way you do when you play pin the tail on the donkey, and then takes the blindfold off and says, there, now that I've completely confounded you, go on and try to find your way. You need it to be shaken up a little bit. If you're curious about God, it might be an interesting thing to read the whole of the book of Isaiah soon. I ended up doing that this week. I read all those beloved texts that Handel set to music, and I read strange texts full of strange names and talk of battle and death and some exquisite poetry. And what I realized going through this book that was written thousands of years ago is that there were people who cared about the same sort of things that we care about. Family, peace, security in all manner of things. Thousands of years ago, there was this group of people who believed in God, and the people were reminded by the prophet of all the good that God had done for them and how deeply God loved them, so deeply that God would not allow them to throw away their lives on petty and destructive things. Reading through Isaiah this week, I encountered a God who is unknowable in a way, capable of great violence and vengeance, a God who is devoted and forgiving and generous with life and hope. Isaiah might be a good book for us this year, because while it speaks to me personally, it was a book written to a community who rebelled, a community who was exiled, a community who came home to the hard task of rebuilding. With a political landscape on the horizon that looks very different than what we have known for the past several years, some are feeling that they are at last home, and some are feeling that they are in exile. I think we're pretty divided as a society, and all of us face the hard work of rebuilding. My hope for us as a worshiping community of faith is that as we strive to be faithful to God, we will be faithful to each other as well. As we seek to love, as we seek to do those things that Isaiah called the people to do thousands of years ago, cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the widow, and plead for the orphan, that as we do that, we will learn again how to reach out to one another and how to reach out to God, whether we reach out in praise or complaint or confession. If you turn around one more time and look back at 2016, you might notice something. We were at our best when we reached out to one another and when we reached out to God. We were at our best when someone died and we came together to thank God for this person's life, and we sat around and we ate cookies and drank tea and told stories about this person whose life changed us. We were at our best when we studied poverty, its root causes, and the effects we're not even aware of, so that when we go out to fight poverty, we bring our minds and our hearts and our faith to it as well. I think we were at our best after the election when we were able to reach across whatever aisle divided us and say to the other, "I do not know you. Tell me about yourself. Tell me what makes you weep. Tell me what makes you think. Tell me what gives you hope for your grandchildren or for the future." Friends, I think we can be at our best in 2017, but I'll warn you right now, we will not do that all the time, but we are a forgiving and merciful people. But let us strive to be faithful to each other and to be faithful to God so that 1,000 years from now, people might look back and read our story and find hope to the glory of God.